This is the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And in this episode, we're only talking about Project Hail Mary and whether this is a mission worth taking in our spoiler review. Question? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is a retired hoe, Scott Clark.
Amaze. What's up, man?
Do you like being called a retired hoe?
Yeah. I mean, it means I've been, I've done my deed multiple times. And, I'm let out to dry now, let out to pasture.
Wow. That was too much. So we're going to talk about Project Hail Mary. Scott Clark is a former Hollywood Outsider and current host of the Gaming Outsider podcast. If you're into video games, go check that out. Mm-hmm. You guys just reviewed John Carpenter's Toxic Commando, which I am loving, by the way.
Yes, we talked about it on the show. It is a lot of fun. I got to talk to you about it when we're done recording here to see what you think about it more specifically.
It's pretty fun. I love the John Carpenter vibes. If you're a movie guy and a game guy or gal, definitely check it out. It's worth it. Mm-hmm. But you guys didn't come here to check this out. You want to talk about Andy Weir's Project Hail Mary becoming a movie with the greatest Ken to ever Ken, Ryan Gosling. So I want to look, this is going to be a spoiler conversation. I just want to have a blanket conversation and tell everyone that's expecting the South by Southwest episode. Amanda and I are getting our schedules aligned because we are just back from the festival, and that'll probably be out very early next week. I know it was supposed to be out this Friday, but I just don't think we can do it because there's a lot going on, including my 20th wedding anniversary, which means I'm not going to miss it for a podcast because, as Scott will attest, that is how you get divorced. If you start doing things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, so it'll be out early next week, and we've got a lot of movies to talk about. We saw a lot of great ones. And I will tell you, if you listen to this before the 27th, They Will Kill You with Zazie Beetz is a lot of fun, as long as you're okay with devil cults. That's all I got to say about that. A lot of fun. We'll talk more.
Okay with them? Like,
I mean, I wouldn't say like you're receptive to them. Like, you're not looking to join.
You got to clarify, man.
Not looking to join, but... You know, if you like movies where they get their comeuppance, it'll be a good film for you. How's that?
Yeah, like Kid Rock, we're down with the devil.
Yeah, I don't understand that analogy, but we'll go with it. So for anyone that doesn't know what Project Hail Mary is about, it's based on Andy Weir's novel, which was, he's the writer of The Martian, if you didn't know that. And it's about science teacher Rylan Grace, who wakes up alone on a spaceship light years from Earth, and he's got a little amnesia. And as he starts to recollect certain events that put him there, he starts to understand why he's in space, and then an unexpected friendship occurs. Now, before we get into spoilers, because we are going to just talk about this mostly open in spoilers, I want to just cover the base, the broad spoiler-free portion. What did you think of the movie as a big fan of the audiobook, which is why you're here, and we'll talk more about that on the spoiler side.
Well, much like The Martian, I know you weren't as big of a fan of that film.
But
that film very much mirrored the book. That's an instance where I read the book, The Martian, after I saw the film. And I was like, wow, they just really did that pretty much exactly like the book. And the same thing is said with Project Hail Mary. Like, they hit every important beat. I was legitimately nervous going into this movie. Like, how are they going to cover everything? And then I saw the runtime of 2 hours and 36 minutes. And I was like, oh, that's how.
Yeah, it's a little long, that's for sure.
It is a long movie, but to cover all those, I feel like everything was necessary, at least for a book reader. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that because, you know, you are more of a film fan than a book fan.
Do you feel like anything? I like pictures more than words. Pictures are pretty.
Well, I mean, we'll get into this in spoiler territory later on, but like there are some portions that I knew from the book that I feel like they kind of glossed over that felt important to me.
Okay.
That I really want to know how a non-book reader, you know, took to that, or if it was explained enough in film format as opposed to on the page. So, but I absolutely love this movie. The tone of the shots and stuff weren't how I pictured it in my head, but it's not a fault of the movie. You know what I mean? Like just because I pictured it one way and sure. while reading it doesn't mean that the movie is poor. It's just not what I expected, but that's not a bad thing in terms of the final product. So I really enjoyed this movie. I thought what they did with this particular character was pretty clever, and we'll get into more details on that later on.
And if $10 is the full price of admission, your score, which is available on your written review as well on the HollywoodOutsider.com, but what's your score?
8 out of 10, $8.
Okay, so that's pretty high. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. Ryan Gosling, obviously, I'm a fanboy at this point. I just love Ryan Gosling. Fall Guy is one of my favorite movies last year. Barbie the year before that. Like, he just hits home runs as far as I'm concerned.
I recently rewatched Crazy Stupid Love and just remembered how much I adore that movie. He's great in that film.
Have you seen his interviews while he's doing the press?
I did. There was one guy that was stranded.
Somebody asked about his New Balance shoes, and he said, I wear them now, which is pretty funny.
Hey, I wear New Balance shoes. I'm cool like Ryan Gosling.
I don't think he meant it as cool. It's what he tells Steve Carell to never wear again because they're not hip. But I guess they've come around, right? Full circle. I like the film a lot. I'll give it a 7 right off the bat. I think that it is too long. I think it goes on a little bit too long. It had the Lord of the Rings Return of the King problem, which is there's like 5 endings, and I'm like, pick one.
But as a book reader, my brother and I saw this with my brother. We were both on the edge of our seat hoping that they were going to end it the same way that they do in the book, because it really felt like the movie was leaning towards giving it a Hollywood ending. And I was going to throw some popcorn if they gave it the Hollywood ending that it looked like they were going to. So,
well, apparently I wanted a Hollywood ending because I was going to throw some popcorn if I could stay awake for the ending. Boom! I'm just kidding. It wasn't bad. It was just, there's too many of them. There's just too many of them. I feel like, and I'll elaborate in just a minute, but I do feel like they kind of stretched out longer than need be, but that's why I wanted somebody who's read the book to mm-hmm. kind of debate this. But I did enjoy it. And again, Ryan Gosling, like, you've got an actor who for most of the film is handling things himself. Like, he is the focal point. He's granted there's a friendship, of course. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about it, but we're trying not to spoil it until we get there, which is in just a minute. But ultimately, it's really about how much can he command the screen. And I think Ryan Gosling is the guy. Like, he can be funny, he can be dramatic, he can be charming, he can be entertaining, he can be dark when he needs to be. Go watch Drive if you don't think so. He's got a lot of edge to him. Or Place Beyond the Pines, it's another one where he was a lot darker of a character. He can handle just about anything, and I think that's very important for this.
I also want to talk about Sandra, is it pronounced Hewler?
Yeah.
Who played Ava Stratt, which, man, I kind of said the same thing about Ryan Gosling when I saw that first trailer for this movie. I was not sold on either of them as these characters, because there are some very specific qualities that Ray Porter, the narrator, specifically gave these characters while he read this audiobook.
Well, let's give a warning real quick, because I just want to get into it. So from here on out, we're going to be spoiler open. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might not want to listen. I feel like this movie isn't that big a deal to spoil it, but for some people it might be. So there's your fair warning. Now, you know, if you're interested, go see it. It's worth the watch. Go see it in a theater. It's definitely worth seeing an IMAX if you're an IMAX mm-hmm. person. And now finish your Sandra Hula.
Well, I mean, just side note, since we are in spoiler territories, because I think it's important to mention this even earlier, the big reveal, again, final warning for spoilers, mm-hmm. if you don't want to do anything, the final or the big reveal of this movie is that it's not just a Save the Planet film, it's also a First Contact story.
Would consider the big reveal? That's a first contact?
Well, no, I mean, there's a pretty big reveal at the very end of the movie when I'm just saying the reveal that there is an extraterrestrial that he is interacting with and communicating with and learning this language. Reading the book, I had no idea. The book was marketed as a Save the Earth deal, and then when he meets an alien, it's like, oh, it's one of those stories. Was a big shock. Now, they unfortunately revealed that in the very first trailer that he's going to be meeting this rock shaped alien or an alien of any kind. And part of me wishes they hadn't revealed that they had left that a surprise and just made everybody think. But again, marketing a film versus marketing a book is a different animal, and clearly the marketing worked. So
I mean, yeah, it's a huge hit now at this point. So I mean, I don't know.
They say it's like Amazon's biggest film opening ever.
It is. Yep, worldwide. It opened biggest for Amazon, I think. Well, it's not the biggest for Ryan Gosling, because he was in Barbie, and
Yeah.
It's not at Barbie levels, but it's, I think it's one of the biggest March openings that's not a franchise.
Interesting.
So that's something too. Andy Weir, I mean, The Martian was a huge hit too. Andy Weir has a huge fan base. Like, people love his books. And I do wonder if that would be a fun surprise, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, I only saw the first trailer. I didn't see anything after that. I don't think Rocky's in there much in the first trailer. They just mention it. So I didn't think it was as big of a part of the movie as okay. you did, as you obviously knew. So mm-hmm. Honestly, I went and saw it because Ryan Gosling's in it, and it looked like a cool space movie. I didn't know right. the story. I was avoiding most of the trailers. I only saw the first one because it came out, and I couldn't avoid it.
But, well, I mean, I think part of it is that when people hear that it's a First Contact movie, that a lot of people, a subset of people, would get upset and be like, I'm not going to go see it because that's what kind of film it is.
Why?
But then, because some people are just not, they don't like aliens. The Martian was a very grounded sci-fi film.
Oh, because it's more, that's in a science fiction, more correct. Than just science-y.
Than science.
Yeah.
But the way that
like when Rocky, the Martian shows up on Mars and everything he needs to survive for 5 years is there.
Well, sure. Yeah. This one is a little less grounded. It's still somewhat believable, but it's Rocky is so likable and lovable. You know what I mean? He's just as much of an everyman.
Animals this year,
yeah, right.
I guarantee it.
Those cuddly rocks. Mm-hmm. he is just as much of an everyman as Ryan Gosling is. You know what I mean? He's the science expert that's left on his ship as well. That's going through the exact same thing, and it makes Ryan Gosling relate to him, and it also helps us relate to him, much like we relate to Ryan Gosling, because none of us are scientists, or most of us are not scientists that are watching this. And that was the brilliance of the book, is that it made the science make sense to you, even when it gets into the nitty-gritty in the book. And this film doesn't go into nearly as much detail. It kind of skirts the line a little bit, but all the science makes sense in the film, and I really appreciated that. I think that's why this and The Martian are so successful, is it doesn't fly over the heads of people. And I think that's a really big reason why it's so successful.
I'm very curious, because I didn't listen to the audiobook or read it for that matter, but I've heard nothing but rave reviews for the audiobook.
Yes.
Which is Ray Porter? Is that who narrated it?
Ray Porter. Yeah. I finally saw a picture of what Ray Porter looks like, and I was shocked that's what he looked like, because he looks like, his voice sounds like a Ryan Gosling type character. And when he meets Rocky, you know how in the film Rocky actually like speaks in chords, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that's their language. So in the physical book, when Rocky talks, it's actually music notes. You actually see a music staff and chords for that. And that's part of the way that Grace learns to communicate with Rocky, is by taking those musical staffs and putting them into a program. And he learns it so well that he is able to hear the chords and actually know what Rocky is saying. They go over that obviously much, much quicker in the film. But in the audiobook, when Ray Porter is reading as Rocky, they put the chords behind his voice as well to make it 100% certain that you were listening to Rocky as opposed to Ryland. And I know what you're thinking. That sounds like it would be super annoying in a, you know, 16-hour audiobook. It never is. It's so much part of Rocky's character. And, you know, it probably would be annoying in the film, but in the film, they just wind up giving him an actual voice to keep it from being repetitive. But in the audiobook, it was great.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the plot. We'll come back to Rocky, because that's, you know, as we go. So I assume the book, well, you said the book is very, very close. So you've got Ryland Grace. He just wakes up and he's got amnesia, right? He mm-hmm. doesn't remember why he's there. And his two other fellow astronauts are dead.
Now, which is an easy groan worthy thing, right? Oh, amnesia, of course.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I guess it all connects at the end once you realize he's really a coward. Mm-hmm. He's not like, which is a scene I absolutely love, by the way. And only, there are very few actors who could pull it. And I know we're jumping all over the place, but it's a spoiler review. So it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But at the end, when Ryan Gosling actually, you know, he's shown to be the coward, and, you know, they're basically dragging him to his certain death. I found that to be probably my favorite scene in the movie, just because very few actors could pull that off, and I'm still with him, you know, because I'm very much like, well, you freaking coward. You're like, you're dooming, you're selfish. And I think he pulled it off because, you know, that the character grows, right? Thanks to Rocky, partly, and mm-hmm. grows into a much more selfless person through that. But I thought that's a fascinating turn of events. And I know I probably shouldn't have started there, but I just find that to be fascinating. I think Ryan Gosling really ran the gamut in this movie.
Well, I don't think it was just him that was solid in that scene too. Strat, the way that she carried that scene, because
she's cold as ice, knew. Man.
Was cold as ice until he left. You could see in her face, she was cold as ice, but you could tell she did not like being put in the position to make that decision.
Right.
She is very much a no-nonsense character. Like, she has a sense of humor that is so slight that when she does actually crack a joke or something, you're almost afraid to laugh. And she does that so well in the whole movie. And then in this scene, when Ryan Gosling is dragged, or Grace is dragged away, you see her like kind of break down. It's like the first moment of, I just had to make this decision. This was not a fun experience for me, but it's obviously for the greater good. And I just thought she did a really, really solid job of
it. She was very impressive. I love how she doesn't joke. And, you know, he's still trying to get her to laugh by his little knock-knock joke mm-hmm. and whatnot. So there's definitely a lot of respect there for the performances. That they're pretty high. All right, so back mm-hmm. to the story. So what they do is they identify that astrophage was... Mm-hmm. Is this star eater, I think is how it's referred to. It basically reproduces. It's an organism that just keeps reproducing, and it's feeding on stellar energy. Is that right?
Solar energy. It's actually, sorry.
And it's basically causing stars like the sun to dim, which means Earth's going to go back to an ice age if they don't figure out a solution, right? That's what they're trying to do.
No, it's not naturally reproducing. It is in space, you know, because that's just what organisms do.
He figures out how to make it reproduce.
Correct. That's which the is correct. A big
yeah.
That's because they need it to reproduce, because not only is astrophage a star eater, but it's also an insane source of power.
And they need it to fuel the shuttle for the long ass mission.
Correct. Because what he has to do in the film is they discover that astrophage is eating stars all over the galaxy,
except for this one
that right. it's staying away from. And so they decide to send Project Hail Mary out to figure out why it's not eating that one, so they can hopefully come up with a solution, bring that back to Earth, and incorporate whatever that solution is into our solar system.
So why is this the initial setup so appealing to you? Because this is like one of your favorite books, and I'm wondering why. I mean, I really like the movie, but why?
I've read it twice. It's one that I never get tired of. A lot of it is how easily you relate to Grace. You know, because I mentioned it earlier, but he's a middle school teacher. You learn a little bit more that he's got some history in the science. He's got some studies that he's done that he kind of got pushed out of the scientific realm because people thought he was nuts. And, you know, he comes to find that over the course of this film that his theory actually was wrong. So that was kind of a fun.
I did love that. Yeah, that was nice that it was different.
Yeah, because your typical Hollywood movie is going to be like, oh, hey.
He's so smart.
Yeah, he's so smart, and he got his comeuppance, so to speak, or whatever. But no, he actually proved himself wrong, which was kind of a brilliant stroke of writing. But just the way that a good writer relates its main character to the reader, in I think Andy Weir does it so well in, you know, the amnesia is kind of easy, but it makes sense here because you're learning with Rylan as he goes, and the pieces of his past are coming together as his brain is being rebooted, basically, or whatever you call it, like atrophy of the brain, whatever you want to call it, because he has no idea who he is, where he is, why he's there. And he has to kind of piece things together himself from the logs on the Hail Mary, as well as like as the memories start coming back.
It's a good storytelling device, I will say, because I mean, if you're just in space, you know, it's going to be gravity for 2 hours, and while that movie worked, you don't need to see it again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it breaks it up and gives you like, okay, now we're going back to the Earth story, and you're learning piece by piece as we learn what the mission is really supposed to be about. And I do think it works on that level because it's nice to break it up, and you kind of get a little piece on Earth and you get a little piece in the ship. It's not just all, you know, Ryan Gosling hanging out by himself waiting for the rock to show up.
Right. Hanks on a deserted island for an hour and a half.
That's what I thought it was going to be, man. If I'm being honest, I thought it was going to be Castaway with, you know, instead of a volleyball, he's got a rock. So,
yeah. But no, it just makes it like, what would you do in that situation? Now, we may not have the science chops that Grace does, but we would all quit. Just do what in the book. Oh, no, they do mention it in the movie. One of the astronauts, because they give the astronauts an opportunity for how to off themselves. If you know, they know they can't survive and there's no chance of survival, you know, instead of suffering through the agonizing pain of dying of starvation or lack of oxygen or whatever, they give each pilot of the Hail Mary, or each astronaut in the Hail Mary, their choice of going out. And one of the pilots or one of the astronauts says that she wants an overdose of heroin, which is like, huh, if you're going to go.
That's a nice, easy way to do it. You know, you won't even know it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So are there any drastic changes from the book to the movie? Is there anything that stood out to you as like, wow, they went a completely different way there?
Not drastic. No, there were just some things, like I mentioned, that were just kind of like, I felt like you had to extrapolate or infer a lot. Like it went into much more detail in the book. Like, for instance, when there was the explosion that where those other two scientists were in, do you remember the massive explosion on Earth?
They blew it up. Yeah.
What that was is an experiment with astrophage that they messed up, and that's how powerful astrophage was, is it basically caused an atom bomb explosion at that, killing the other two astronauts, which is why Ryland had to go on the mission,
right?
Because they didn't have a science officer. But there was another piece of that they didn't put in there. There was a, how do you explain this? Only certain people could even,
Scott, how do you explain it?
There were only certain people that could even qualify to go on this mission because they had some kind of genetic making within them that allowed them to survive the trip. And it was like a 1 in 10,000 chance that you had it. So someone like Strat couldn't go. Any of the other science officers couldn't go. Ryland happened to have that, whatever it was, to be able to travel. They left that completely out of the book, probably for good reason, because that just seemed kind of like...
Out of the book or out of the movie?
No, that's out of the movie. Yeah. It was in the book, and they didn't put it in the movie.
I think it should have been in the movie, because that is the one plot point where I go, really? He's the only one that could have done this? I mean, it doesn't...
Right. They kind of played it like, because he studied it and he created this stuff and he knew the science, that he was the only one that could do it. But again, in the book, there was something about his chemical makeup that allowed him to make the trip. So in order for them to find somebody else and then get them trained up to speed to do this, it would have taken too long. They wouldn't have had enough time to get him there and send something back before the sun died, more or less. So that was the only really big thing that was kept out.
Now, I talked a lot about Ryan Gosling. What did you think? Did he deliver the guy you've always seen in your mind, or did you see Scotty Clark, middle school teacher, in this role?
Well, I'm not in middle school anymore. I'm back to third grade, but he did. I wasn't sold on the trailer. Once he was on the ship, I just realized that he was the guy. He was the right guy for it. A lot of it is because the narration was so good, and I've heard, you know, listened to it twice. I've heard that narrator's voice for 32 hours now of that audiobook, and it's just, you know, that's what you picture in your head. So anybody that's not that is going to, it's not going to work. But Ryan Gosling proved me wrong and made it work. He was really solid.
So you were really worried about him. You were worried about him as the star.
I genuinely wasn't worried about Rocky, because I figured there's no way they were going to make that, they were going to mess that up. And I was very happy that they used practical effects.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But it gave Ryan Gosling something to emote against instead of just using a green screen. You know what I mean? Even though you know, Rocky clearly wasn't real, he was able to talk to Rocky. So, that is one other thing that they did change from the book is he didn't have a hamster ball deal in the book. He had like this network of tunnels made out of... what was the gas he used to make that? I'm drawing a blank right now. The gas that he used to make that plexiglass stuff.
Okay.
In order for him to, because Rocky can't breathe oxygen. He actually breathes in ammonia. So you remember when he first opened up the little capsule and he's like, oh, that smells awful. It's because it smelled like cat piss because they live in ammonia. They breathe in ammonia instead of oxygen. So he had to build these network of tunnels so that he could be on the Project Hail Mary with Grace, but it was just like all along the ceilings and the floors and stuff. He didn't have like a hamster ball that he could just go around and do.
He uses Xenonite.
Xenonite, thank you, because xenon is a gas, but their alien technology allowed them to turn a gas into a solid, which is super strong. That's actually what they used to connect the Hail Mary to his ship, which he called the Blip A. So all of that was xenonite. It was like in ready supply, and they could mold it into anything they wanted to because of their technology.
Another thing that I really loved about what the movie did, especially with space, and very few filmmakers do this. I think Joss Whedon's probably the most prominent example because he did it in Firefly throughout the entire series, is that when you're in space, you're not hearing vehicles. You're not hearing explosions. You're not hearing the bridge go across from ship to ship. None of that. It's because you wouldn't hear it in space. So they play it very, very true to facts. I mean, you know, and I was very concerned about that because Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, I'm sure you know who they are, which are the directors. They did 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, which of course ties them exactly to a big giant space movie. But I think they were the right directors for this because knowing their names, I was like, well, they're going to just have a little too much fun with this. And they did not. I think they did a very strong job of adhering to actual fact-based science where it matters. I mean, obviously not with the alien portion of it, but a lot of it is fact-based science or based on theoretical science, which I appreciate. And I think, you know, that's something that's a positive because it's not bad to think. You know what I mean? It's not bad to use real facts.
Well, and a lot of that credit goes to Andy Weir because even when he wrote The Martian, he actually consulted like real life astrophysicists and astronauts and talked about like and made changes to the book.
Can I grow potatoes on Mars? Probably.
The Martian was actually like a collection of short stories like that he could just kind of posted on the internet. And then he actually collaborated with real scientists, and they helped him correct it. And then he compiled it into a book and released it as a book, which I thought was a fascinating experience. So I don't know how much work he did into Project Hail Mary in those terms, but you know, if The Martian has anything to say about that, I would assume he did a lot of research as well.
What did you think of the ship design? I mean, for a character called Rocky, his ship looks like metally.
Looks like what?
Metally. I mean, it looks like the Fortress of Solitude. It's just like a metal version.
It's again, it's not what I picture in my head. It just looked like it had lots of, you know, pointy ends. It just looked like a lot of like sticks sticking out of everything.
Steel rods.
But again, the Rocky's race can't see. They can't see like we do. They actually see by hearing. They're kind of like bats in that they hear.
It's like sonar.
Kind of like sonar. Like they are able to visualize things by you know, by hearing them, which is so like they're not really in concern about what a spaceship looks like. They're just more worried about aerodynamics. So in that sense, or not aerodynamics, what do you call it?
Thermodynamics?
There's no air in space, but
I don't know.
You know, things that are going to maneuver through space better than looking cool.
You know, aerodynamics. Maybe.
Is it considered aerodynamics stuff?
There's no air? I don't know. I'm not a scientist, nor do I play one on TV. I don't know. I do know if I had a Rocky, I would keep him. I'll tell you that. That's a fact.
He was bigger than I expected. He was described in the book as being the size of a small Labrador. And I felt like he was a little bit bigger than that. Like, it wasn't huge, but I just imagined him being, you know, like you could hold him in your arms. Size, but that was not the case.
A couple things I love about Rocky. Fun fact, Meryl Streep plays one of the rejected voices. I thought that was a fun little tidbit. It is a puppeteer or a puppet, like you said, it's being puppeteered the whole time. And I believe it's being puppeteered by James Ortiz, who is actually the voice of him that we hear with the statement and question and all of that. Fist my bump, all of that. That's James Ortiz. And I'm glad that it's a puppet because I have said this, I don't know how many years, but if you go back and you look at the monster movie, like Gremlins and E.T. and things like that, where they had puppets, Alien. Yeah. Anything that had like a physical, practical effect always looks better than the new CGI. I don't care how good the CGI is. Except maybe Rocket Raccoon. Typically, I would much rather have a puppet than...
Oh man, I couldn't imagine Rocket being a puppet. That would have been
he wouldn't work, right? But,
no,
but this is a very very slow moving. It's very much 80s Amblin magic. I mean, they really did bring Rocky to life, and the voice really works. And can you kind of elaborate on how he determined the speech patterns a little bit, since you've read the book twice?
How he determined?
Or yeah, how Ryland Grace, like he, yeah, how Ryland Grace did it.
I mean, it was very much like any movie where you have two characters that don't speak the language and they point at things. and then, you know, like point at myself and I say, Scott, you know what I mean? And then that character registers it in that. So in the movie, Ryland uses a computer. So he hears a tone. He has the computer record that tone. He basically creates a library or a dictionary of words. And then he's able to...
He does it very fast in the movie.
Well, it doesn't take place... because that would be a really long, boring movie if you just did that. So they had to montage that.
But you did a speak and spell montage?
Kind of. But I mean, in the book, like, it starts out with very rudimentary language. Like, he has to fill in the blanks. He has to like, oh, I got to enter this new word in there until eventually... You know, most of the words are there and the math is there. And the whole deal with the clock, where he had to show him what a clock was, and then Rocky showed him what their clock looks like. They use a completely different time because they, you know, their planet doesn't go around their sun at the same time as ours. And it's all a lot of pointing and nodding and speaking the words to learn it. And they did it just the right amount of time in here. I thought it gave credit to what the book did brilliantly, but it didn't overstay its welcome.
So what do we get? Is there a difference? Do you get more about Rocky from the book than you got here? Or do they do a pretty good job of explaining?
You miss a lot of, you know, his home planet, what it's like on there. They briefly, again, remember I talked about things that they just kind of gloss over?
Do they speak from his point of view? Like, do you actually hear Rocky's voice or do you hear it from Ryland's perception the whole time?
Rocky's voice is just notes. Like okay. I said, it's just music. So like when he first meets Rocky, all he hears is notes. And then eventually he learns the language, so to speak, so well that he can actually hear the tones in his head and know what Rocky is saying. So Rocky never learns English. He does the same thing that, you know, so whenever Ryland has to speak in the book, he has to type in his computer what it says and say the tones to Rocky to hear.
So that they can communicate to each other, because Iridians only, like you said, they only hear.
Correct. Yeah. So you don't hear a whole lot about Rocky, about Iridia too much in the movie. You know, you'll learn a little bit about their anatomy. They kind of glossed over like how they eat and how it's disgusting and the watching while you sleep, and they even go into how they reproduce. You know, you never meet any of those aliens until the very final shot of the movie. But you do learn a little bit more. Like in the movie, they glossed over the idea of radiation. Mm-hmm. That was how all of his fellow astronauts or whatever, the Iridians on the ship died, is that they all died of radiation poisoning, which he was protected from because he's an engineer. And he was staying, his cabin or whatever was very close to where the astrophage was kept. And the astrophage protected him from the radiation. Mm. So that kind of thing was glossed over. The explosion, like I said, was kind of like, you just kind of had to feel like, oh, I guess they're just sending Ryland. But again, they went into much more detail in the book about that. Just minor things like that, but nothing that took away from the experience. I was very, very happy with the results here.
I love that they watch Rocky, like as a clip in the movie. I don't know if you caught that, but
what do you mean
when he's showing them culture and stuff like that, and he's showing them, I'm fairly certain I saw a Rocky movie clip at some point.
Oh Rocky, yeah, okay, like Sylvester Stallone Rocky.
Yeah,
I don't know if you noticed, but in my written review, which can be found on thehollywoodoutsider.com, did you notice my subheadings?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Look at you think you're very smart. You should go read it and you'll see what he's talking about.
Yeah,
but again, so does anything in particular not work for you? I mean, 8 isn't perfect. So what doesn't work about it, other than the fact that it has too many goddamn endings?
Well, I do think the length, I gave it that score. It wasn't an issue for me personally, but I know that a lot of people are going to be, I wasn't looking at my watch because I'm watching it as a book reader going, are they going to put this in there? Are they going to put this in there? Are they going to put this in there?
You're seeing it come to life, yeah.
Right. And then at the very end, you know, I was on the edge of my seat, worried that they weren't going to give the ending that this thing deserved, you know, because in the book, spoiler alert, again, we're already here, Ryland doesn't go back to Earth. He's not able to go back to Earth, and he actually lives on Iridia. You know, and goes back to teaching, but he's now teaching Eurydion's children, which is cool.
That was adorable, by the way. A bunch of little rock people. That was cute.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, that kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about the whole reveal of him being a coward. Is it's almost like he kind of doesn't deserve to go back in some respect. He does. He saved the planet, right? But he didn't do it willingly at first. Like you said, he grew as a character, but. You know, because of that decision, it's kind of poetic almost that he doesn't get to go back, which is not as happy of an ending as you want, but it was a really great way to end that book because the first time I read it, I was like, ugh. You know, I wanted him to go back and I wanted Strat to actually give him a hug or something.
I think it's a better ending. I think it's
I do now.
No, but I think it's a happier ending for him. I think it's better for him.
Oh, you think so?
I do. Yeah. I think if he goes back and he's going to lose years, he's going to get back and the Earth is already a shit show. And meanwhile, he can go here with people he obviously connected to more so than mm-hmm. he did to anyone on Earth. And he, you know, he has a real friend.
Yeah. I mean, I came around to that after reading it the second time. I was like, you know what? I really, that ending makes way more sense. And I dug it. And he's right back where he belonged, which was, you know, teaching kids. So
here's my problem with the addition with the longness. Because, okay. And I'm sure reading about you're like, oh, that's great. But basically, he has to save or... We think Rocky's going to die twice. And that's just, you know, exhausting to me. Like, mm-hmm. do it once. You play that card. You do it again. It doesn't work for me. And so, you know, when he saves Grace, I think that's great. I think that's an awesome moment. And then, of course, it seems like he's dead, but he's not really dead. And he finds a way to, you know, he duct tapes his device or whatever he did to make sure that he's more protected again so he can heal and hopefully come back to life, which he did, which is great. And then he sends him off on his way later. And, you know, and the whole reason why he turns around, in case somebody was napping and missed it, is because he was heading back to his home planet and realized that because of how the astrophage was functioning, the radiation was going to leak. And it's going to kill Rocky over a period of time, right? Like that mm-hmm. was the whole problem. So he had to make a choice. Like, I can shoot these to Earth or I can go back and get my buddy and do it that way. I can't go to Earth.
The Beatles.
What's that?
The Beatles.
The Beatles?
The devices that he sent back to Earth with all that information. They never called them that in the movie and they never called them the Beatles, but that's what they called and they named each one of them, you know, Paul, Ringo.
Yeah, I saw that on the devices. You did see mm-hmm. them on it. So you do see it. But what I will say is I don't like that part of the ending because number one, he's already almost died. So now you're milking my empathy. I don't like that. And the second part is I would want to make sure that this shit got back to Earth. You're having a whole lot of faith on a mission that's already gone wildly wrong to this point. You know, mm-hmm. you're only pulling it off by the skin of your teeth and the fact that you found this other buddy who can help you. Once again, and I will say this is an Andy Weir thing. He just keeps planting, you know, randomness that hopefully helps our heroes. You know, it's not like people are just like, well, he was so smart, he figured his way out. Not really. He had a friend. And just like the Martian, yeah, everything he needed was right there. Otherwise, he'd be dead too. So that's beside mm-hmm. the point. But so I don't like that the fate of the world is in your hands and we're supposed to now accept that, okay, now he's a hero. Now finally he's brave, right? But not really. I mean, I get that he goes back for him, but he kind of potentially sacrifices Earth to go back for this one rock.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Point.
And I don't like that.
Because he had enough did he though? He didn't have enough astrophage to make it back to Earth either.
No, he could have made it. He couldn't do both. He couldn't go get him. That's what he did. He did the calculation. He couldn't go back and get him and make it to Earth. He could do one or the other. He could send him or he could go himself. And he chose to send Beatles and hope that they got there.
To your point, that's kind of a selfish decision to go save.
Yes.
The other.
100%. I think it's actually a dick move. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he winds up, you know, saving both. In the long run, but that was a decision.
But it's a coincidence more than it is a plan. I mean, yes, they thought it was going to work out the way, you know, they're going to get back to Earth and he's holding a lot of faith in that something is going to go perfectly correct.
They were kind of covering their bases by sending four of them. You know, there was all the data was copied onto four different ones in case one of them went wrong. Sure. That, you know, maybe you could say that's how they justified that he had four chances. I mean, that was the plan the entire time. So, but yeah, I get it.
But he could have got
it.
I get home. I that's all I'm saying. And then, but then again, they milk the, he's going to die. I think what, if it really would have been more impactful, I, here's what happened. The first time he almost died took away my, my emotional connection to him almost dying. So once he makes that decision, it seems more selfish to me because we've already been here. We've already played this note. We're already, you know, this is a game we're playing again for the second time. They should have, he saves Rylan and he just, you know, he barely makes it, but he's fine. He ultimately is fine. And then play the he's going to die card because then it works. It would have worked for me personally if they hadn't already done it 20 minutes earlier in the movie. That's my biggest problem with it.
Okay. It didn't bother me.
Like, well, I know you're committed. I'm just saying, like, because you're just like, well, I'm curious what you thought. That's what I struggle with, because that's what really, as somebody that was into the movie for most of its runtime, that's the part where it really lost me. It's like, okay, he almost dies, and now he's back. And of course, they basically paint it like he's dead for a good couple minutes, and then bam, he's not. You know he's not, but you know he comes back because I've seen a movie.
They did a really good job of making that, because usually that doesn't last.
I've seen
last
a movie
for
the last 100 years, so I figured he wasn't dead.
But it was a really long time, right? Like
it was, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. That's what neutered the impact for when he's like, oh, I got to go back, or he's going to die this time. I'm like, well, no, maybe he'll be fine again because he keeps being fine. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. I mean, people would have rioted if Rocky didn't make it.
Yeah, they probably would, because he's the adorable puppet. You can't kill the adorable puppet. You can't. You just can't. Who's the MVP here? Because you like Ryan Gosling and Ryland Grace, but you really love Rocky. So, like, who has your heart more? Book as a book reader and as watching the movie. Which, does it work differently for you?
I think it worked quite as good as the book, which is like something that I never say. You know, we always say, oh, the book is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that's the case here because the book has more time than a film does and you get more attached to the characters. But I could not have asked for a better adaptation except for maybe some of the tone. Like I said, some of the tone just felt not what I pictured in my head. But, like, you know, there's no
too
way.
Too funny in certain spots or?
No, I think more in tone of the way it's shot, like in the coloring of the interior of the Hail Mary and things like that, are just not what I pictured. It's hard to describe. Like I said, it's more personal preference, and that coupled with the length is why I gave it an 8 instead of a perfect score, because I really, really liked it a lot. But it almost doesn't feel fair to take points away because it doesn't work in my head. But
all right, so just the MVP. Who's when you watch the movie, which character, like, really, like, you're going to be thinking about that character long after this is over? You're going to be thinking about Rocky or Grace? Because I'm probably leaning toward Rocky.
Yeah, it's got to be Rocky. I mean, because as much as I love Ryan Gosling as Grace, Rocky is the unexpected twist that wound up being the lifeblood of the film. You know what I mean? Without Rocky, it would have been just another Save the Planet story that would have been interesting. But it would have been Sandra Bullock out in space for 2 hours again. You know what I mean? So
right. She came back to Earth, though. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, they're not all going to end the same way. So, and plus, she was only like right around the planet, dude. Like he was, you know, how many thousands of light years away?
He went a ways away. Yeah. It was quite a distance. What do you think about the setup for this? About the idea of, I mean, I think this is actually a really creative and intelligent plot device. To have this astrophage that's actually eating away the sun. And
yeah, it's a living organism.
Yeah,
it's
I just, think that's really interesting. And I assume
that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite things in the book is the way that he does all of these experiments with astrophage well before. It's part of like the flashbacks is as he's learning astrophage. Like he is doing these, like he, you know, the dark room that he created with the one guy where they built a dark room to try, they learned that they could make it breed.
Sure.
They went down to the nitty gritty of the science in that, like even measurements and things like that were really interesting. Like even when he first was trying to figure out that he was in a centrifuge, he did a pendulum experiment in the cockpit of the Hail Mary to realize that it was spinning. That's why he had artificial gravity, and that's how he figured out he was in space. So like the science part of it was done so well and intelligently, but in a way that made sense to a layperson like myself.
Sure.
It was awesome. And then throwing in this astrophage, this new, you know, organism, that feeds off of the sun, which makes sense that it does, but it also reacts differently than anything that we've ever seen before, but it's not out of the realm of impossibility, is pretty awesome. It's just, it was very cool. Like, what do they call that band?
Creed?
not band. Like the stream of astrophage that's in the sky, the something line, the Petrova line.
Yes, Petrova line.
The Petrova line is just, you know, this line of astrophage that they, you know, collected and then harvested it and bred. And
it's almost
just,
looks like a ring. Almost looks like a ring around Saturn,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. But it's also like just this really cool story device that this thing that is killing us is also going to help us figure out how to destroy it. You know, that they use that to power the Hail Mary. You know, it's just, I love it's that. Just kind of brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, it's little just like cells. Know. It's just like cells. We can save people through our understanding of cells, and they also, cells can kill us if, you know, the wrong impacts from cells attack, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, and then the fact that the solution to this whole thing was just finding a predator for astrophage. Like, you know, you expect some kind of like really super deep
magical
explanation, and no, yeah. They just found something that likes to eat astrophage, and that's it. That's the whole solution.
Just,
and you're like,
found a hungrier animal. Yeah.
Yep. That's, there's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking to the ending where he does go back and teaches the little Rockies. I think that is the perfect ending, and it's obvious he's in no rush to go back. I like how they fixed the ship and everything. He's like, you know what? Let's take some time, whatever. And I feel like he's going to be staying there for a very long time, probably the rest of his life.
Well, he's probably ashamed.
I mean, don't you think he's redeemed, though? I mean, he did what she thought she would do, or what she thought he would do, is he did the right thing, ultimately, even if it never would have happened without this random occurrence of Rocky making him a better person, but he did do the right thing.
Well, I mean, you kind of argued that he didn't do the right thing. I mean, he made a choice that could have been disastrous.
On Earth, they got one back, so therefore he kind of did, right? I just think that decision is very selfish. So, but most people aren't going to see it that way, apparently, because they love the movie and they think, he did the right thing. And I think they're just happy he went back to his buddy and had his sweet little friendship. But I'm like, yeah, but Earth could possibly die if none of those get back to Earth.
Right.
You know, where he could have made a solid trip back to Earth.
Well, plus, did you notice when they do show Strat back at home when she finally gets the data and they start getting to work, she's old.
Yeah.
She's aged significantly. Yeah. And it was really interesting because they touch on in the book that by the time Project Hail Mary launches, she's going to prison for the rest of her life because the steps that she took to make this project happen went against like global law and things like this.
Elaborate on this. That's not in the movie. So elaborate on that.
I know. It's, I mean, she's just basically says all the time that, like, you know, we're not going to celebrate even if you do get back, because if you do get back, I'm going to die in prison. You know, it's just like she's broken so many international and worldwide laws to make this happen because she's so no nonsense and has to do whatever it takes to save the planet. And, you know, that is one thing that I kind of wish that they would have put in the movie a little bit, but it was,
because she's just out hanging out on a ship.
Right.
When older.
Because they're just waiting for it, right?
Yeah, they're just like hanging out waiting for this rocket to hit, apparently.
And even if Ryland did make it back, you know, because it takes so long to travel, there's a good possibility that she might not be alive.
True.
By the time he gets back as
That's
well.
True. That is true.
So, you know, who's going to know that he was a coward? You know, it wasn't really his choice to go on there. Well, I feel like even if they did know that, maybe they'd just look past it because he did save everybody. But
I feel
also, what's the shape of the world at this point?
Sure. Yeah, I get that. I'm not saying I don't get it. I'm just saying it was still selfish. The guy's selfish throughout the movie. I just love his friendship.
I understand.
I'm not saying he should have done it, but I understand. I will say one thing that I thought was interesting, because I figured this out pretty quick, but I saw people in my theater were utterly shocked when it was relayed to the audience that he was a coward, that he was kicking and screaming all the way out of the plane. Or out of the shuttle. When you're reading the book, did you feel that impact, or did you see it coming too? Because as soon as he doesn't, you know, because Rocky calls him a hero or brave. The word is brave that he's looking for, and he just writes it down. But you can tell he's disgusted with himself. Yep. You know, that seemed pretty obvious to me at that point.
That is one aspect of the film that I think was portrayed better in the film.
In the film.
It, Yes.
Okay.
In the book, it was touched on, but it didn't. It wasn't as quite as much of an impact. It was just kind of like a, oh, hey, really want to do this. He kind of chickened out, but it was very powerful here.
Again, that one I attribute to Ryan Gosling. I just thought he was that scene really, really, because it is kind of funny, right? Because he's kicking and screaming, and they're just dragging him out. But it's also kind of like, God, man, this is cruel. The guy doesn't want to do it. You can't make him do this. This is not fair. Like, he has a right to his 30 years on Earth before it's done, too. You know.
Well, that's probably why she went to prison. That's probably a big part of it, because she put him on that ship even though he didn't want
to
go.
Well, in the movie, I don't think she went to prison. I think she went to a boat.
That's what I'm saying.
Waited in the ocean.
Yeah.
To escape prison, apparently.
Maybe.
Now, there's talk. He was doing interviews, and he actually said, if Andy Weir could come up with an idea, he would love to do a second film. Can you see that as possible?
Oh, in this universe of this story?
Yeah, of this story.
No. I wouldn't even want another Project Hail Mary book. Go to something different. I've heard that they're already writing a screenplay for Artemis, which is another book by Andy Weir, which was not nearly as good as The Martian or Project Hail Mary. So I'm really curious how they're going to adapt that, because that just felt like just a run-of-the-mill sci-fi story to me, but people like it, so we'll see. But no, I don't think we need more Project Hail Mary.
Okay, well, can I make a pitch to you, since you're a fan?
Okay.
Of Sandra Hüller now, right? You seem like you've kind of warmed up to her?
Yeah.
Anatomy of a Fall.
All right, that's on Netflix and Hulu, so.
Yes, and you want to watch that as soon as you can. Because she is phenomenal in Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, I will watch that tonight. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Dude, she is amazing in that movie. Yeah. But it's very much like you're gonna walk out of it going with your own perception of what happens. But it's just a wonderful performance. And it only works because of her. She's just that good.
Interesting. She's so all right. Good. I will watch that.
So closing thoughts on Project Hail Mary. Because here's what I'll say. I went into it not knowing much about it other than it's a space mission movie. I didn't know much about Rocky, and I will say, I guess we didn't really talk about the friendship itself. I was very moved by the genuine friendship that evolves. Like, they feel like they have a real friendship, like guys have, you know, where they just come, that they would have, like, just stuck in space together, you know?
That's what felt good about both the film and the movie, or and the book, rather, is that that grows. Obviously, you have more time to let that marinate in a book. But they still did it masterfully in here. Like the pacing of that, like by the end of it, they were bros. You know what I mean?
They were bros.
I mean, they were.
Fist
they were
my fitting. Bump.
They're that's not what that means. It means something completely different. But I got a little pin when I went to see the movie, like a Project Hail Mary pin, because I got to see like the early screening of it or whatever. Sure. And my pin just says amaze, amaze, amaze. I was like, huh, didn't want to go with fist my bump, huh?
I think you could have went with either one. They probably should have done both just to make it a collectible.
But yeah.
So really last thoughts of the movie for you.
I think this is proof positive that sometimes it is okay to adapt very closely to the original source material. Because I know that it's hard to do that when you go from a book that is potentially hours and hours and hours of content to between 2 and 3 hours of content. But they did it. And I feel like with a lot of those, any of those pieces missing, it would have felt noticeable, not just to book readers, but also to film readers or film watchers. So yeah, awesome adaptation. One of the best adaptations I've seen in a while.
I can give you one where there's two movies and each one of them represents the best version of it and the worst version of it. And that's okay. It, chapters 1 and 2. Chapter 1, amazing and perfectly captures the intent of the book. Chapter 2, they're like, oh, we got all this money. Let's just CGI the shit out of everything and made a movie that's not very good.
So I did like part 1 much better, but
way better.
Yeah,
man. I in closing, I think Ryan Gosling crushed it. I'm glad that he recovered, because Fall Guy was a little bit of a bomb, which is too bad. I really thought that was a fantastic movie, and love the friendship with Rocky. I'm telling you, it's going to be a Christmas present this year. I don't know what form they're going to do. Is it going to be a little cushion? Is it going to be a
Christmas ornament in the little ball?
It's going to be an ornament, something like that. They really did a great job of making that character come to life. And I 100% am glad that they went with the puppeteered version, because I think that made the impact so much more relatable.
I never really thought of it as even being a puppet when I watched it. Because I didn't
either. No, me either.
You know, it felt like it was alive the entire time. I didn't look it up to see if it was CG or if it was practical. It looked real to me, but I've been fooled before. You know, looking it up afterwards, and like, oh yeah, it was like porcelain, or not porcelain, but fiberglass puppetry. And I was like, it felt alive to me. It looked legitimately alive.
And I think it actually taught me something that I think when I'm amping up my sarcasm, I'm going to end with question or question? Statement so people know like what I'm doing. Sarcasm? They should have added that one too.
There's no sarcasm punctuation mark, Aaron.
They need one. All right. Well, thanks for joining me. Of course, you can always find Scotty at thegamingoutsider.com. But thanks, Scotty, for doing this with me.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the next one.
And go see Project Hail Mary. I would recommend an IMAX if you're going to go. Like, seriously, it's that good. It's visually stunning and so beautifully shot. I will say, like, it's beautifully shot. And I really want to, don't you want to kind of go on a little space ride where you go into an anti-gravity room and you get to float around like that? Doesn't that sound fun? I mean,
you can do that without going to space. You can just, like, go into an airplane and they do those. Like steep dives and ascends and
I don't
descends.
Know if I want to be in an airplane when that happens because it just feels like crashing and I'm only going to get one shot. So I'm not Tom Cruise. I can't afford to keep doing it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Go see Project Hail Mary if you haven't already. Well, we've already spoiled the shit out of it, but it's an awesome movie. According to Scott, I think it's a really good movie. Either way, you're not going to be disappointed. Thanks for listening. Remember to come back next week for our South by Southwest episode that Amanda will be joining me for. We saw a bunch of movies. I have a lot of recommendations. One or two that are already out. Ready or Not 2 is already out, and They Will Kill You is coming out by the time you hear this, which is a very fun, crazy, bloody movie where an eyeball actually gets a lot of screen time. That's all I'm going to say about that, but it's worth looking into. And a lot of other cool movies are coming out. I've got some great recommendations for everybody, so come back for that. Thanks for listening. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to see Project Hail Mary, buy popcorn.